Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown.
What some of those trainers get?
Well, I met with the late great Mr. Leslie Mulligan, the guy with the show. You know, he was a tremendous fighter in the 40s, but he had, like yourself, he called it the Tatrap, and back then it was a death sentence for the career. But he had beat Bob Montgomery in 2 rounds in a non-title bout here in Philadelphia. And he was the reigning lightweight champion of the world.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reaction, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy.
What's up, what's up, what's up? This is your host, Mark Roxy, and you are listening to The Boxing Breakdown. If you're joining us on YouTube, welcome. What's up, Harold?
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Welcome, everybody, and welcome Harold Hunt to the program. We are here on Memorial Day weekend. Yes, shout out to all those veterans and people who have lost their lives for this country. Thank you for your service. You are in our thoughts and prayers today. It's a special weekend, and y'all should not forget that. And man, I'm just, I am so excited to talk to you, Harold, and to welcome all you Boxing Breakdown listeners in here, because we have a lot of stuff that happened this weekend in boxing. There was, of course, the wonderful card that was put on by Eddie Hearn, Matchroom Boxing, DAZN. They did their thing. And, man, they put on a great card that was absolutely world-class. And then, again, I tuned into some of the PBC activities as well. And, boy, did they deliver as well, man. And I just want to get into some of that. We don't have time to chop up everything, but certainly there are some pieces to the shows that took place that we really need to cover, right, Harold? I know you've had your time to do your research and write some things down, and I know you previewed everything. So what are your initial thoughts? Devin Haney versus Jorge Linares showdown. Let's talk about that fight, man, because it was outstanding. If you didn't get a chance to see it, you missed a great fight. So I guess I'll start off, Harold, by saying that, much respect to both of the pugilists. They were both amazing. Devin Haney definitely did his homework. His team did his homework. They had an absolutely exceptional game plan to fight what I consider an absolutely game opponent in Jorge Linares, who also did his homework and was quite amazing. Although he came up a little short in the fight, in the end, he did an amazing job, and I'm sure that we're going to see a lot more of Jorge Linares. But let's get into the fight. Let's chop this thing up, Harold. Let's break it down.
Well, it was a DAZN card. So being a DAZN card, they had a full stadium. They were in Las Vegas. So it was great to see a full crowd up to the top, all the way down to ringside. So that was nice. As far as the fight was concerned, Mr. Haney was nicely attired, had a little fur on, all white, a little silver there. He was looking pretty dapper, you know, so I complimented on his attire. as far as his work was concerned, he had a lot of pressure to come in there and be aggressive and not be evasive and win. So he actually went in and he was aggressive and he was trying to stay in the pocket, move his opponent back, and give the fans an element of himself that he hadn't really shown before.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I thought it was a step-up fight for sure. I mean, everybody touted it as a step-up fight, and certainly, you know, that's exactly what it was. There were a lot of questions that needed to be answered, and, you know, Devin Haney, man, the story of the fight, I mean, we could talk so many about so many details, but the jab was significant. Like, the way he used his jab was absolutely wonderful, man. He also didn't, Harold, I don't know if you picked up on the fact that with the jab, he wasn't really doubling up on the jab. He wasn't doubling up and throwing a right hand in there as Linares suggested he should have. But he was jabbing real nice stiff jabs, keeping Linares out in the field. And that jab really is what allowed Devin Haney. Yeah, it really allowed him to manage the fight offensively. But there's another story that's embedded in this fight, which is that Devin Haney's defense was pretty solid. And, you know, while he was getting hit with the hook, you know, hats off to Linares. Linares knew that that shot was in the box. It was going to be available all night because of the way he carries his hands. But, you know, the way that Haney was bending and slipping and maneuvering and pulling to the outside, pivoting, I mean, it was really exceptional. And also the corner did some impeccable work too, because there were some times in the fight, Harold, where Devin Haney was pulling straight back. And when I saw that, I started to think, oh man, this is not going to end up good for Devin Haney. But, you know, the guys in the corner did, you know, bring it up and said, listen, man, you got to roll over to the side. Do not pull straight back. And sure enough, he started to really key in on that. And I think that saved his bacon on the defense side.
Yes, yes, I agree with that. What I saw was because he stood in the pocket and was being aggressive, his focus was strictly on being offensive, staying in the pocket, making his presence known, showing that he could take a punch. And he kind of negated all the other necessary movement that he usually does, because he doesn't go straight back. He always moves his head. All that type of things that he does defensively, he usually does that. That's why he really never gets hit, and he looks somewhat boring to people. But right, because his mandate was to be to attack, he forgot. He didn't do some of those things. So when he's attacking, which is somewhat out of his norm, when he's moving away from attack, he's going straight back. Right. So those things were adjusted, as you said, and he went back to those things. Now, I really like the fact that he was really trying to go to the body, and he used that jab to set up the body. So it was great to see that type of work from him. But yeah, those mistakes did come up. But as you said, they were corrected. Now, once they were corrected and he kind of went back to the mode that he usually fights at, he got hit, because he was going out of the pocket and Linares was simply stepping to him, following him out of the pocket. When he stayed in the pocket, he was safe. Now, when he started getting hit, I was very impressed, because he knew how to grab, he knew how to hold, he knew how to turn and what have you. And so many prominent fighters have never learned that. A la Thomas Hearns, he never learned how to hold, how to throw that punch and hold. As you know, our boy Floyd will throw a punch and he'll automatically hold. He'll get right in there and not let that other punch come back after he's thrown his big punch. So he showed that finesse, which I was impressed with. He just got in a little trouble when he kind of resorted back to his old style. And obviously he has a good chin. His father was pretty low key this time.
Yeah,
I expect
yeah,
him to really be on the referees and just be berating, you know, everyone else. But he was very, very professional this time. This was a pretty big step up.
Yeah.
So, you know, overall, the adjustments you spoke of, that those are beautiful. I did see that. But
yeah.
It was great that he was aggressive. And as far as the eye test is concerned for the casuals, they were like, wow, he tried to fight. He tried to get in there and take this guy out. And that is a complete change from his usual eye test for the casual.
Yeah, he certainly was stepping up, showing he's a big boy. He stepped up in the pocket and he was showing he could bang too. And that was, I think that was a big, you know, those fighters out there that are looking to, you know, lock horns with Devin Haney, that's something to keep an eye on for sure. You know, I also wanted to touch base and just chat with you briefly about Linares and his combination punching. Now, this is what I believe to be so. His combination punching was outstanding. The only problem is that he didn't capitalize on it. What was working, he didn't stay with. Had he stayed with the combination punching, he would have found himself in a position of success, because when he threw punches in threes and fours and fives, he landed every single time and got the best of those exchanges. And they were, you know, they were pretty thunderous shots, including the one, I believe it was maybe like in the seventh round, or when was the bull in the matador move? When did that happen? What round was that in? Seven or eight, right?
It was the seventh round. It was seventh. We not where he, no, he got to him. The last two rounds, 11 and 12, he had to hold on. He got to him in the 10th where, right before he kind of staggered him at the very end.
Yeah.
So that was pretty interesting. But yes, like you just said, Haney threw off his rhythm. Those combinations were coming nicely from Linares, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And when he did throw them, they did land as they should.
Right.
But he couldn't find the space to throw them on a consistent basis because of that jab.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That jab stopped him from using those combinations that were successful.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting, Harold, because that's why I opened up the show by saying that that jab was the story of success, because, you know, I mean, there were some times where he was sticking that jab right to the diaphragm. He was sticking the jab to the sternum. I mean, that jab did a lot of things. He had a lot of looks on that jab. It was just pretty, pretty impressive. And so, you know, hey, Devin Haney, he retains his WBC World Lightweight title in a thrilling fight against Jorge Linares. And where was that? That was at the...
In Las Vegas.
Yeah.
What's it? The MGM Small Room, I believe.
Yeah, it's like the Michelob Ultra Arena or something. No, it was in Las Vegas. Yeah, that's right. You're right. And
the small MGM room.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Eddie Hearn, he said in an interview on Thursday that, you know, he plans on making a huge offer. I don't know if you heard about that. To none other than Teofimo Lopez, right, Jr. And I heard murmurs today. This is not factual yet, certainly not contractual yet, but I heard it was somewhere in the ballpark of $8 million to fight Devin Haney. Did you hear that?
No, but that is very interesting. That's a nice little piece there. If it comes true, that'd be great. I look forward to that because Haney did look vulnerable enough. So the public will want to see that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And he was exciting enough where they want to see it. Had he shut the guy out using his usual mode of operation, you may have not necessarily got Eddie Hearn to be so forward with the number and announcing it so quickly or even alluding to it.
Yeah.
And the public definitely wouldn't have been excited, because I am just now, and it could, may not, you know, come true. But hey,
Yo.
Just great.
The sound of the cash register, cha-ching, $8 million to fight Devin Haney. Now, listen, let's not get ahead of ourselves. While that offer is on the table, Teofimo Lopez has a very, very important task to tend to, which is to stay focused on the George Camboza Jr. fight, which is taking place relatively soon, right? So when is that fight? Remind me of when that fight is, because I lose all these dates in my head.
It's next month.
Yeah. June 16th. No, yeah. Pardon me. June 19th is when that fight is happening. June 19th. Yeah. Yes. It is June 19th, Harold. And, you know, I mean, it's going down and we'll see what happens. It is a mandatory fight. So it's, you know, it's going down. It's the IBF mandatory fight, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I thought the fight was amazing. I was relatively impressed by Jorge Linares, what he did in delivering that three punch combination that wobbled Haney, right? It was right before the bell in the 10th round.
Yes, I saw the replay. Hey, but Linares deserves another great fight. He should get a lot of work behind this fight here because he showed he still has it. He's more than just a trial horse, someone you have to walk through. Gatekeeper, he is not a gatekeeper.
Nah, he's
in this situation. He was put in the gatekeeper situation, but he's not there yet. He's still a viable a fighter that can beat you and further his own career. So I was really glad to see that.
Yeah, I don't want to throw the corner to the wolves, but I will say that this was a game plan issue. This was a let your hands go issue. And if Haney comes back to the table, if Linares comes back to the table and repairs that letting his hands go issue, gets a little more defensively responsible, just a little more, man, you know, I don't think Haney would do a rematch. I really don't think so. What do you think?
If he was wise, he would not do so.
Right.
Because mentally, Linares knows if I get more rounds with him, I know what to do to defeat him. So Haney needs to say, been there, done that. Unless it's a mandatory on down the line, he shouldn't elect to have a rematch with Linares.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I wonder what Devin Haney has to say about it. I mean, I wonder if he'd say he'd do another rematch. I mean, you know, the other thing is, let's close out this conversation about Devin Haney and Jorge Linares, which, by the way, was an amazing fight. Let's just talk about their sportsmanship and the way they greeted each other. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but I was very impressed at their interaction and how they treated one another in the midst, just at the end of the fight, as they, you know, went back into the locker rooms and such. You know, they were just so kind to one another. They were complimentary to one another. It really showed a wonderful level of sportsmanship. And even, you know, Haney, he's so humble, man. He was, you know, he even asked Jorge Linares, you know, what did you think about my power? You know, how is my power in comparison to the Matrix? You know, how was it? And Jorge Linares said, no, man, you got power, bro. You got power. You know, he advised him to use his jab in a double format, so double up on the jab. So it'd be like a double jab right hand. And he actually went through, like, sharing that knowledge with him. I thought that was really beautiful. You know, it was really,
yes,
really.
In light of that, when the fight was over, the last bell rung.
Yeah.
They were not the usual hug it out type of situation. It was really tense for that 1 minute after the bell rung.
Yeah, and man, you can't listen. It's boxing. You know how it goes. You know how we get in boxing, man. When it's time to fight, you know, you got a lot. There's a lot going on right there. emotionally,
true that.
Energy, you know,
I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying usually what I see is as soon as that bell rings, they're like, oh, it's over, and they hug it out, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Not this time. They kind of still kept that stance.
Yeah.
You know, looking at each other like, okay, you're going to hug me, I'm going to hug you. If not, that's not going to happen. But for them to migrate into what you just said, where, you know, it was actually a teaching lesson or a mutual society of admiration,
yeah,
about the power and this and that and the other, that was great. So it did go to a point that was really palatable. But initially, it was not there because Lennard was like, oh, if I had a few more rounds, I would have had you.
Yeah, no, exactly. If it was a 15-round fight, that might have been the case, you know?
Yes.
That might have been the case,
that.
Harold.
I mean, truly believe that. I do. I truly do.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. However, but Haney will be such a better fighter after this. You need to be, dragged over the coals. You know?
Yeah.
And the word is dragged over because you get to the other side where you're not hot. You're not burning up. So
right.
You got dragged over the coals. And he needed that. He needed that buzz. He needed to see what he was going to do and how to avoid that kind of thing. So I thought it was a great learning lesson all the way around. It was good. It was really good for him.
So, Harold, give me your prediction. Where does Haney go next?
Well, he can't go up because his power would not translate to 147. He's got to stay at 140 his entire career. That's that. You have to acknowledge that and know that, and you can't speculate on that, and you can say what you want. He can't move up.
Have you made the call to the team
and be successful?
Have you called the team and let them know that?
He is. Pardon me?
Have you called the team and let them know that?
No, I haven't done that. That's just my speculation. What I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Now, I judged his fights. I judged the fight of his coming up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna judge my record on one of his fights.
Okay.
And technique was just beautiful. He was beautiful to watch in the ring what he did. I'm just saying I don't see him having the pop to get respect at the next weight class. Without the respect, Pete, they just walk through you. And, you know, he can't afford to be walked through at the next level. So
yeah.
I believe his career should stay here. He should stay here and make a career at this weight class.
Yeah, man.
Shout out. That's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I can't see him at a 147 pound at all. I mean, I could see him even going down. I could see him fighting at 135. But 135, 140 is fine. But I don't see him going up for sure. I think that would be catastrophic. You know, I mean, even taking a punch Jorge Linares generates most of his punch power from velocity, right? He's not necessarily a big thunderous puncher, but he is a very fast, accurate puncher, you know? And so I think, facing the likes of, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see him up against A. Teofimo Lopez if that ever actually happens, because Teofimo Lopez is a thunderous puncher, you know, and that could be a problem, you know. But then again, Haney has demonstrated that he can keep you out on the outside. And if he, you know, that's what makes that fight so compelling, because if he can keep Teofimo Lopez Jr. on the outside, it'd be interesting to see how Teofimo Lopez is actually going to get there, you know, get to the pocket.
Well, Haney does beautiful work, man. He does beautiful work. I mean, round after round, he is beautiful to watch. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But some people want to see knockouts. They want to see the aggression. They want to see give one, take one, you know, and that's, something people want to see. Others want to see that beautiful Picasso type work. And he definitely can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, man, that was a great discussion, Harold. And, I really appreciate that. I'd love to just share with you. I don't know. Did you get a chance to watch the Showtime PBC card with this guy? Oh man, there were some really good undercard fights.
Nonito Donaire.
Well, excuse me. There was the Nonito Donaire fight, but then there was, let me just make a mention, an honorable mention of a couple of fights. And I may mispronounce their names, and please forgive me. I apologize ahead of time. But it's his last name was Mataras, right? Mataras from, I believe he was from Puerto Rico, versus Dzhukhamabayev, yes. Is right? And his, I guess Dzhukhamabayev's trainer was Manny Robles. And yes. Man, that was an outstanding matchup, bro. I mean, really,
yes, it was.
It was phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yes, it was.
I mean, it was like a throwback fight, you know. If y'all listeners and people who are tuning into the YouTube channel, if you haven't watched that fight, click on it, see if you can get it, man. It's a thriller. It's really a thriller. But you know, Dzhukhamabayev went down in the fourth round, right? That he went down in the fourth round.
Did.
He started out early, man. He was banging Mataras. He was banging him up.
He was.
Yes.
He was outspeeding him.
Straight right hands, left hooks in the box.
Dropping that left hand straight down the pike. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
So that was the first three rounds, you would think it was decided.
Yeah.
But it switched. And that's the best part about it. As you said, Mark, that was a great fight. I don't mean to interrupt you, but yes.
No, you listen, I just love
the back and forth, and the back and forth was great. The technique changes, and then the sheer bullying took place,
man.
Where I'm just going to break your will.
Yeah. And
then the caveman came out, and the opponent, he was like, I'm not going to die right here. You're going to have to take up some of this. I'm going to die going out. And that was the back and forth that I enjoyed. Yes.
Yeah. So Harold, you know, this fight, for those of you listening, and the fight took place at the Punch Bowl. What better place for that fight to have taken place than the Punch Bowl, man? It was amazing.
In California. And they had that COVID crowd there. You know, they were all spaced out and all of that.
Yeah.
But they were loud enough.
Oh, man. In round five, right? Dzhukhamabayev, man, he figured something out in round five. He made a wonderful adjustment in round five where he started to slide back and pull. He was pulling Mataras into him. And every time he would pull him in, he would land his straight left hand and he'd drop underneath and then throw the right hook, you know, or roll out, pivot, you know, kind of pivot to the side. I mean, it was a beautiful display in the fifth round. You know, I would say that Mataras in round five, six, and seven, those rounds were spoken for because Mataras was just stalking Dzhukhamabayev the entire time, just stalking him, wearing him down, and you could see his face slowly, bro. Harold, his face slowly went like it went into like a purge tick. It looked like a purge thing. It was busted, man. And then, really, you know, Mataras, if I'm saying his name correctly, his, you know, the story of that fight really was about his rhythm, his punch rhythm, man. He was just blasting and his rhythm in his hand. He wasn't throwing particularly hard shots, but he was throwing volume shots.
Just the frequency, yes.
Oh,
yes.
It was incredible, you know? And yeah, so I guess... go ahead, Harold.
In that first three rounds, he had the frequency, but he couldn't figure out how to get it in, how he could be consistent, because he kept getting hit with that left hand over and over again. But by the fourth round, he figured out how he could keep his offense going, and that's when he was able to knock him down. But the first three rounds, it was coming. That left hand was coming. He couldn't really figure it out. And his hand speed was good, but he just couldn't time that punch coming in defensively.
Right.
But he did figure it out.
Yeah.
So that's why I encourage the fans to watch that fight, because it changes on a dime. And then changes back. And then changes back again.
It definitely ebbs and flows. I was on the corner of my chair watching the fight. seriously, I really was. I mean, and, you know, in the seventh round, I think Mataras ended the seventh round where he caught Jukumabayev solidly, man. I think it was a solid punch. And then, of course, the fight got stopped in round eight on the suggestion. I believe it was purported that it was the ringside doctor that stopped the fight. That's what was reported. But I believe it was the corner. But
say his name correctly. I believe he made the call to do that.
Robles. Yeah,
yes,
man.
Robles.
And you know what? If that's the case, I think you're right. And actually, I just wanted to comment on that. Hats off to Manny Robles, because he demonstrated not only that he's an excellent trainer at the highest level, he demonstrated that he truly has the fighter's best interests at heart. He stopped the fight at the right time. He, you know, at that point, he wasn't going to win on, he only had a puncher's chance to win the fight, and he was just taking too much beating. And I'm just really, really impressed that Manny Robles stopped it. Hats off. That's what more coaches, should be doing, and really, you know, protecting the fighters. And so I was just very impressed. You know, that's something you write down in your book the responsibility of a good coach is to see your fighter's face turning into a purge tick and stopping it.
Yes, because there was a soundbite where he said, "You'll live to fight another day."
For sure.
I'm very proud of you. You did very well. You live to fight another day.
For sure.
And he was taking care of his fighter, as the commentator also alluded to. So, yes, he showed his value as a trainer and as a person.
Yeah,
so,
man.
That's good to see.
It was. And now, so let's move on to Nonito Donaire and Nordain Ubadali, right? That's how you say it?
Good one. You got it.
Did I get it?
I'm not even going to try to say it.
Nordain Ubadali. Ubadali, right? Okay. That's about as good as I'm going to get with that name, but... Nordain Ubadali is from Paris, France. He's a southpaw. You know, he went up against one of the, you know, best fighters of the generation, Nonito Donaire, the Philippine Flash, who is, by the way, an orthodox fighter. It was for the WBC World Bantamweight Championship of the World. And if I recall, the referee was none other than Jack Reese. Yeah, man. He did a great job in that fight. He really did a good job. But we're not going to talk about Jack Reese right now. It was a 12-round fight. It was for the WBC World Bantamweight Championship of the World. And, man, the fight was amazing.
Yes. Donaire, from round one, he said, "This fight is mine." His body language, very first punch, he was like, "This is mine. There's no way this guy's going to beat me." Mentally, he was already done. He just needed to apply himself and win the fight.
Right.
The other champion didn't have a chance. He didn't have a chance. He simply didn't, because mentally he was already there. He knew he was going to overpower him, and he knew he was going to catch him in between.
Right.
And that was that. That uppercut that came from outside, supposed to come from inside. That was a telltale sign of he just didn't deliver properly, and he left the door wide open, and he took advantage of it. Yeah. Personally, round one, I knew it was over.
Wow. Well, I will tell you, it vaguely reminded me of the fight that Nonito Donaire had many, many years ago with none other than Vic D'Artagnan. You remember that fight?
D'Artagnan.
Oh, man, I used to love D'Artagnan, but it was a very similar approach. It was almost like the old Nonito Donaire actually showed up in the ring. You know, the way he was stalking and plotting, he wasn't over-plotty, but he was definitely plotting, and he was stalking, you know, the entire fight, the smaller fighter, because I believe
I see it a little differently, Mark. I do. See it differently.
Okay. Tell me what you see.
D'Artagnan was chasing him down. "I'm going to beat you down. He was running in there. He was running into the pocket.
Okay.
He was running into that focus. He was running into that stuff. When he got hit and changed his direction, then Donaire came on. But initially, Donaire was like, if you want to come in, I'm going to give you something for coming in. This fight, he was going to his opponent, and he was delivering.
All right.
He wasn't parrying. He wasn't counterpunching. He wasn't trying to – he was going to take that belt. So, in my opinion, those were two different fights. Beg your pardon, sir.
You listen, you inspired me to go back and watch the fight because that fight was a long time ago. You already know what happens up here. Some, you know, I don't have a good memory. I got some, you know, yeah, my memory's not very good. I was in a car accident. I think you know that. I'm like, my memory is busted since that car accident. But the bottom line is this, right? Nonito Donaire came back. He landed 40% of his power shots. 40% of his power shots were landed. It was beautiful. Round three. I believe round three, there was a knockdown, right? It was right after the
knocked
bell.
Knocked him down in the
Third
round. They knocked him down in the fourth, yes. I believe it was a third.
I think it was a third, yep. I can't.
So the third round, he knocked him down. And it was
right at the bell.
Right. It was the beginning of the end because he was landing that uppercut. Oh, he was landing that left hook, that beautiful left hook. And he continued to drop him. I mean, to hit him with it. It didn't cause any kind of movement from his opponent until then. And after that, every time he hit him with it, it shook him.
Yeah. No, I mean, man, he you know, he hit him. He had him hurt a couple of times in that round with clean shots. I think the most damaging shot was the one that ended the fight, which was actually a right uppercut.
A right uppercut
to the sternum, to the actually the breadbasket.
Right.
And
he was bending over. He had got hit with the left and the right, I believe.
Yeah.
And he was bending over and he finished him with that uppercut.
Oof.
And he had a lot of torque on it. It was low. It was powerful.
Yeah, that took out every ounce of starch he had left. I mean, there was no more water in the basement after that shot landed, bro. It was literally fight over, you know? And, you know, I tell you, you know, Nonito Donaire is 38 years old, and he looks ageless. He looks like, I mean, he was amazing. I mean, he really looked amazing in the fight. It says a lot about 38-year-old fighters, i.e. Manny Pacquiao.
Uh-oh. All right,
Manny Pacquiao, Errol Spence. Do not sleep on Manny Pacquiao. I don't want to open up
that's
the can of worms.
To be another podcast, another day.
Yeah. For sure. I had to throw that in there, though, Harold. I had to. You know me and Manny Pacquiao. He's almost on the same. For me, it's like you know who? Mike Tyson, Manny Pacquiao. Right?
Pacquiao's not a bully.
No,
he's not a bully. Donaire is a bully.
Nonito Donaire is a beautiful technician. He's a
bully with it.
Yeah, he's a bully.
Overwhelms you with the brutality. Whereas Pac-Man, my opinion, Pac-Man, he simply out-techniques you and he hits you so many times from so many different angles, you're just overwhelmed. When he was younger, he was knocking you out. And when he was older, he just hit you so many places that you didn't see coming, and you just kind of just fell into it. But his thing is not to be a bully. He didn't really bully Thurman. He didn't really bully Bronner.
Right.
He just out-techniqued them, and he hit them so many times, they became bewildered. Donaire wants to take you out.
Right.
Those are the differences in their styles. Their ages may be similar, but he wants to take you out. So to me, they're two different fighters.
Yeah. No, I get that, man. Listen, it made Punch Bowl history. Champion at age 38, the bantamweight, the new WBC world bantamweight champion of the world, right? And the king has returned. That was a quote directly from
Nonito.
The king has returned. right?
And he's self-trained.
And he's
self-trained.
Yeah, man. And at the end of the fight, he said a couple of things that I think are really important for y'all that are listening out there. Here's a little bit of education for you, okay? If you listen to that interview at the very end of the fight, he talks about his ability to continue to grow as a fighter and the importance of being a fighter and being able to continue to grow. And he's 38 years old, and he's talking about being able to continue to grow and the connection between the mental state of a fighter. When your mental state is correct, you are able to continue to grow. You take care of your body. You treat yourself like a professional athlete, and you're able to fight into your 30s and perhaps your 40s. And I really, you know, I really thought that that was a very, very powerful statement, because, you know, physical, mental, and spiritual attributes are the most important ingredients to make a fight.
Yes, they are.
So, you know, hats off to Nonito Nader. Hats off to all the winners, man. Everybody who won, you know, hats off, because all I can say is it was an exciting weekend of boxing.
And yes, it was. Both cards were great. Yes, they were.
It really was, man. It really was. And we've got lots more to look forward to in the near future. There's tons of fights coming up. Jose Pedraza versus Julian Rodriguez is coming up. Shakur Stevenson versus a guy named Jemiah Nakathali, I guess it is. And
Who's a mandatory.
He's a mandatory.
He's a great fighter. He really is. He's not a pushover.
Right.
But Stevenson is just, he's just that next level. He's just that next level. He really is cerebral with this boxing thing. He really is. He may not knock people out or what have you, but his technique and his ring savvy and generalship and IQ. Yeah. I haven't seen anyone of his age possess such tendencies. So I'm impressed with him.
Yeah. No,
whether he knocks someone out or not.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. And, you know, the other thing is Teofimo Lopez is going to square off against George Kambosos Jr. That's coming up. Jermell Charlo is going to fight Juan Macalles Montiel. That's going down. So there's, I mean, Vasily Lomachenko is going to fight Masayoshi Nakatani. That's happening. There's a lot of good fight. I mean, there's tons of other ones as well, but I will say that the next month is going to be on fire for boxing. So if you're listening out there, either in audio land on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the boxing breakdown, or if you're watching on YouTube, please make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button below. Please make sure you share the podcast with others. You know, we're really trying to grow the podcast, and it's a labor of love. We love doing this podcast. And really, I just want to thank you for being with us. And with that, I'm your host, Mark Roxy, and I'll see you on the next edition of the Boxing Breakdown. Peace and love.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy.